for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 689 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Immortalis is a gripping indie comic that's the result of the creative vision of both Sean Lewis and Ryan Mosley, and I talked with both of them this week in episode 689. Sean and Ryan began work on this successful indie series back in 2021, and it has been coming out both as a self-published indie comic and from Marcosia, one of the UK's leading independent publishers, particularly in the graphic novel field. The book is described this way. Immortalis is the ongoing adventure of Tam Montefiore, born in 1813 to be the one true deicide in the war between heaven and hell and the old gods of myth. We talk about how this book came to be, who the characters are, and what else these excellent creators have coming our way soon, including the 12th and 13th issues of Immortalis. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Immortalis is an action-packed, mythology-infused graphic novel series published by Marcosia, and it's got everything. Ancient prophecies, fierce battles, gods at war, and a heroine caught between fate and free will. And I'm probably going to butcher her name. Tam Montefiore was born in 1813 to be the one true deicide, the only one who can put an end to the war between heaven, hell, and the old gods of myth. But what if the prophecies were wrong? What if everything she believed was a lie? Now, 200 years in the future, she's training with a team she barely knows, hunted by enemies from her past, and facing a choice she never expected. Does she still want to save the world? And I love the name Immortalis. And I'm talking with two of the biggest creators of this book. And co-creator and, editor. Oh, man, you do a whole lot of stuff on your end. It's Sean Lewis. How are you, Sean?
I'm good. How are you tonight?
Good. It's good to talk with you. And then the co-creator, I see co-creator. Are there other things you do? It's Ryan Mosley. Ryan, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. And, I'm actually kind of the big picture storyteller. I don't do the editing. I'm definitely not an artist, even though I've been credited as such.
Right.
Right. But our creative process, Sean and mine, Sean does like the writing, but we talk about story all the time. And so like, that's kind of where I kind of sit, is just that guy that he's able to bounce stuff off of, you know, and we talk about the mythology and things like that. So that's kind of where I sit on this book specifically, right? There's other things that I'm writing right now that aren't published yet, but you know, for Immortalis, that's kind of where I'm at, is I'm the co-creator and kind of the big story guy.
Yeah. Oh, great. And to be fair, yeah, Ryan, this was all Ryan's fault. I'm going to say that it was his big idea that we kind of came up with in 2021 and just took off running with and kind of honed it into what Immortalis is now. But Ryan's the one who originally started this whole process with Immortalis. So
interesting. Where'd the name come from? I got to know.
Well, oddly enough that you asked that question. So the Immortalis is actually not who you think it is. And that's a reveal that we'll tell later in the story.
Yep.
But the idea is that there are this war between heaven and hell has been raging since the foundation of the world. And there are a few people that are called to fight that battle, and they are immortal, and they're known as the Immortalis.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay.
Right.
So it's a group, not an individual.
Well, I mean, it should be, but it's not right now.
Okay. All right. So they're in the process of transitioning.
Yeah. It's something that we go on into a little bit more, but it's kind of a story point. But that's okay. you do find out eventually who it is, and yep. I'm pretty sure it's not who you think it's going to be.
Yeah, and it's funny, Wayne, because you're the first one who's kind of asked the right question, right? Because we always call Tam the deicide, but we don't ever call her that because it's not her, and that's kind of one of the big turns in the story. So yeah,
right.
Cool. Because one time there was a book, and I was interviewing this lady about her book, and there was a title with something, and they didn't identify who it was, but they had this main cowboy guy was the main character. And I said, "Is the cowboy guy the main character?" And she stopped, and I thought, "Oops, I asked a good question." I said, yes. "We'll have to read the book to find out." I said, "That's where we got to go from here." Yeah. So I love doing that stuff.
Oh, sure. No, it's a good question, but we wanted to make sure that it was a, like, from a big picture standpoint, the war has been raging for eons, and there are a few that have fought in this battle for ages. And so, like, we get to find out about that whole kind of mythology within the mythology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
We do drop some hints in there. Like, I think it's issue 11 or maybe actually 12. I'm kind of getting lost in the weeds here with, you know, all the issues we got out. But it mentions that, Zeus killed the previous deicide. So yeah, there are little hints we drop all throughout the story of this 6 to 8 year story. So
I got to ask a question. What's a deicide?
Go ahead, Ryan. You want that one?
So that's actually something that we kind of came up with. And so in order for this epoch of time to be brought to a close, there has to be someone or something that brings it to a close, the one that can close the book. And ultimately, it's the one that would kill the gods, right? They'd be a god killer. And so there have been many that have been thought to have been the deicide, but they're not. Right, because they haven't been able to bring forth, you know, the reset button, so to speak, and so when we meet Tam, what we find out is that these deicides, they're the ones that actually are able to or not able to do the final job, depending on their kind of their constitution, I guess, how they're made up, like what. Who they are as a person in order to be able to bring their full power, they have to be, you know, perfectly aligned and not, nobody's been able to do that. And so Tam, we don't know for sure if she's actually the one, right? Like we're telling this story, but just to be honest with you, there's several characters that could be the deicide, but we don't know if it's Tam, and we're working on the assumption that it is, and that's how we're telling the story from that perspective. But just like anything else in this story, there can be twists and turns to that question.
Okay, so something we got to pay attention as we're reading, in other words,
right.
Which I love something that makes me pay attention. So Now, the thing that I was noticing right away, and it's something we talked a little bit about before we started to record, is that you guys have been working on this for a little while now. The first issue, according to what I see, Volume 1, Issue 1, says August 2022 on there. But you guys were working on that before the issue came out, of course. So how long have you guys actually been working on this story?
Sean, you want to take that one?
Yeah, it was around 2021. I'll give you a little bit of backstory first. Ryan and I used to work together in Arkansas. We worked for a satellite company for about 8 years. I ended up moving to Denver. Ryan and I always appreciated that we were both kind of in that geek culture. Like we went on a Thursday night having to work the next day to go see Rogue One, you know, in theaters, opening night, that kind of thing. So we've always been comic book fans, you know, big movie fans, big kind of nerds. So, and we always kind of just jokingly talked about doing something together. You know, I'd published some stuff, a few comics back between 2005 and 2008. kind of fell out of it. But, you know, we'd always kind of joked about, you know, we should do something together. We should do something together. We just, you know, I'd read his stuff. He'd read some of mine. And it wasn't until after I moved to Colorado in 2021, Ryan reached out to me. He's like, and I'll let him take off with this after this. He goes, hey, I got this idea I want to run by you. So, Ryan, you want to take it from there?
Sure. So, originally, the concept that I came up with for this whole story, it starts with you're familiar with the story of Van Helsing, right? Like, his bloodline is kind of the chosen to fight against the monsters. So my idea was, what if we had, if we made Van Helsing fight with the monsters against some other thing, you know? And so I had the first character that I came up with wasn't actually Tam, but it was her Obi-Wan Kenobi's,
yep,
so to speak. And so I started developing the backstory for Jason Okeanos, right? So we just refer to him as Jason for the most part, but he has a very expansive backstory. And we had to figure out how to make him, and I didn't have a full fleshed character study for Tam yet. I told Sean, like, here's kind of the idea that I have. And that's where the Van Helsing thing came into play. And then, so I told him all this, like, I'm rolling on this storytelling because I'm pretty excited about it. I'm pretty jazzed. And so I get done kind of the spiel of everything that I had in my head about this story. And Sean doesn't respond at all. He's like, oh, okay. Kind of like, just kind of brushed it off. I'm like, well, I guess he didn't like it. I don't know. But we kind of ended the call after that. And I think it was maybe the next day or maybe 2 days later, he calls me back. He's like, hey, Ryan, I really love that idea. Here's some ideas that I came together. I've written the first 8 pages of the story.
Wow.
And so it kind of just started from there. So I had this huge kind of concept and idea, and he was able to like sculpt it down to like, here's the core story that we're going to tell. Right. And so that's kind of where it came from. And he's the one that kind of put Tam together. And then all the other characters, there's a few that I had some input on as far as like, you know, I had an idea for a vampire kind of character, which eventually became Pierce. But that character, I can fully consider it Sean's character. And then there was like kind of the Jekyll and Hyde character that we have for Aldehyde. There's some stuff in there. And then Sean came up completely with Donnie and Charmaine and Oberhasli.
Yeah. Yep.
And so like he came up with all that stuff. I came up with a few things and then we put this team together and Sean was able to start writing the interactions. But before we started like actually writing the story, we started everybody's backstory because we felt that was really important for their motivations. So we took each character individually and we wrote it all the way out and say, here's their story and here's how they got to this point. And this is why they're on the team's roster, you know? And the second part of that is we wanted to all base the story kind of in a reality. Like we couldn't have somebody flying just because we needed somebody to fly. There had to be like some physical reason that they would do that or somebody that has a healing factor. There had to be a reason like how they were able to do that. It's not just magical. Like there's a science behind it type of thing. Like, even though we're talking about like mythology and legends and all that kind of stuff, we still wanted to make it like a street level type of story, like a relatable type of story. And so we had all these kind of ground rules that we were writing from, and we didn't want to make the story kind of so outlandish that it couldn't happen. Like, yes, we're talking about like stuff that's, you know, all, again, like all the myths and stuff like that. But there's a reason that they're myth, right? So these kind of things in our story, all those myths that we know, that's actually a history of what happened. It's just over the course of time, that history, because it seemed so unreal, became those myths, you know? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think that one of the things I really enjoyed about the book was the marriage of these various mythologies. into stuff, because usually like a story will have one mythology and that's it.
Right. But
this one, it's kind of the collision of all these different mythologies.
So, yeah, no, and that's very purposeful. So every culture on this earth has some kind of mythology. So if you start from the idea that all of that is the history of those people, so those myths become that history. Therefore, we can write about it because in this world, those things actually happen. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, so that means that all, like, you know, we deal with the Hindu gods, we deal with Celtic gods, we deal with Norse gods. Like, there's all these
Aztecs,
things.
That, yep.
Yeah. And so, like, they're all in there. And they to these people, they were all very real. And so, like, we wanted to make that happen, but we weren't going to make it outlandish like Marvel does with, like, Thor, for example, right? Like, we wanted to make sure that hey, these people that are in myth, they were based in a reality at some point. And so this is what our interpretation of what they would be like in a modern day type of thing, you know? Uh-huh.
I thought it was really interesting the way that you started the book in the very first issue. It starts in the year 2020. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this group appears.
Yep.
So you introduce everybody all at the same time, because normally people go stumbling into each other and then they finally get together. I like the way that this one, actually, we get to see them, you know, actually as a group, and then we learn a little bit more about them as we go along. So I thought that was a nice way to do something a little different, because, like I said, I get tired of the little groups that go from one place to another and suddenly they discover each other and stuff like that. This was a nice thing to see them actually after they've actually met each other.
Oh, we appreciate that. We wanted to tell how the team, like you were saying, the team got together, but we wanted to show them all together at the beginning, you know, kind of give the fans kind of see what they're going to be in for and who the group is. And thank you for noticing that. Cause we do come back to that march into Hades. I believe we come back to it in issue 6 and then farther down the road. And it's a big part of the story kind of in the second story arc. So thank you for noticing that.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I enjoyed were almost right at the beginning, you kind of describe who the characters are without actually pointing them out. There's some person standing there, it says, and then they say immortal, demon, vampire, warlock, old god, and monster storming into Hades. How? I thought that was kind of a nice way to kind of pull us into this as a bargain, a bad struck bargain.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I really enjoyed that, because then now I'm drawn into it. And it goes, then interestingly enough, it goes back to 1810, which I thought was, I did not expect that. So this is a book, I like a book that makes me pay attention. And that's what this one, you know, I turn the page and I go, wait a second, something's happened since the last page. So I got to pay attention here. And I love a book that does that to me, because if I don't have to pay attention, I literally don't care. And it's not long before something else distracts me and I never get to finish the book. But you made available to me a lot of the issues and I could not stop reading them. Once I started, I was so grateful that I had them all at one time, because I would be sitting going, now what? Oh no, I got to wait for the next one. But we should talk a little bit about that. How many issues are actually available right now?
So right now, 11 are out there on, if you're a digital fan. I'm not a big digital guy, but for digital, they're on, issue 11 is on Drive-Thru Comics and Cosmixology through Amazon. Physical copies of the trade paperbacks of the graphic novels of 1 through 5 and 6 through 9 are on Amazon, Waterstones, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, all your big box stores, you can get them.
Great. Because does Marcosia make them available to local shops?
They do not. We actually, we kind of take care of that ourselves. We have about 17 bookstores in Colorado that carries them. We have a kind of a back team that helps us with the business side of it right now. Sean Smith and Catherine Good-Mowry, they are reaching out to retailers across the country. So we're trying to get into that, but we're not going through Diamond or Luna or any of that. We're trying to do it the old fashioned way. So
that may be a benefit right now with everything.
Right. With all the
craziness,
the world of
all the stuff that's going on right now.
Oh, it's so crazy.
While we're talking about that, if people want to, let's say a store wants to get a hold of your book and sell it, how do they do that? Who do they contact?
They can go through Marcosia's website, or like I said, Walmart. They can order offline. But if they go directly through Marcosia, I believe they can do bundle rates and that kind of thing. So,
okay, very good. And it's kind of good. It sounds like you guys are based in Colorado, based on where the stores are. Is that true?
I'm in Colorado, and Ryan's in Arkansas.
Yep. Oh, okay. All right. Yep. Okay. Well, the good news was you guys met each other before, because I know many comics where the people who make the book have never actually been face-to-face.
Right.
My roommate who I helped him with the book, I ended up being the editor for it. And what he did was he was in Florida, and the artist was on top of a mountain in North Carolina.
Wow.
And then the colorist lived in the Philippines. Yeah. And I think it was South Carolina where the letterer was and stuff like that. So they've never actually all been in the same room together. So it's a strange thing how comics are working these days. Because, you know, the Marvel bullpen, everybody was in the same room and everybody saw each other and stuff. It's not that way anymore.
No, and we are the same way. Like I said, Ryan and I knew each other. We used to work together. We were friends for a good bit. We have artists in Brazil, I think Mexico, Portland, Oregon, Los Angeles, our letters in Chicago. Our main artist, who starting on issue 13, we finally decided that we liked one of our artists, and we signed him to do our Immortalis exclusively. So from issue 13 on, it's going to be Ramad Wisnu, who is actually in Indonesia. So wow. Yeah, we have quite a worldwide team too.
Diversity.
Yes, sir.
All over the place. So pretty cool. Now, I want to spend a little time, if we can, talking about who the various characters are. And I'll go down that list, and if you guys want to kind of fill in who's who, the Immortal, which one is the Immortal?
Brian, that's your character. I'll let you take it.
That's Jason. Jason's an immortal character. He's kind of like a Highlander. Mm-hmm. In a way, so in his backstory, he used to be – so there in our mythology, it goes back 10,000 years maybe. So there was two great continents that were peopled, and they were Atlantis and Lemuria. And between the two, the old gods were angry because the people stopped worshiping them, adoring them, and were pulling away from that and focusing on the science and you know, discovery and things like that. And so rather than let that happen, that version of humanity was snuffed out except for Jason. And he was cursed by Zeus to, because of something that he does. He was cursed by Zeus to walk the earth forever until the agreement is either fulfilled or, you know, Zeus is killed. So it's in Jason's interest to find the Deicide, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what his life purpose has been. But maybe that kind of has waned because he's been around for such a long time that he fears that he'll never find the true Deicide.
Hmm.
And so that's kind of Jason in a nutshell.
Wow. Okay. The demon. Which one is the demon then?
The demon is Oberhasli. So the two agents who you remember in issue one, the 1800s, Tam's father. You know, he's about to be killed in Indonesia, one of those British colony countries, and you know, he makes this plea to heaven and hell. So later they come to collect an angel. Charmaine from heaven and a demon from hell, Oberhasli. So Oberhasli is the demon. Yep.
Okay. How about the vampire? We talked a little bit about that. Which one is the vampire?
So that's Pierce. And his backstory is kind of interesting. He was a veteran of World War I, not World War II, but World War I. So he's been around for quite a long time. About what, 100 and I think we figured out about 150 years or so.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So he remembers like the genteel time. So that's why you always see him kind of dressed up a little bit, is because that's the era that he comes from. But he was tormented by, I don't even know what they're called. What do we call them? The group of vampires.
Yeah, it was like a vampire group. Yep.
In Enclave.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
Yeah,
we never really named him.
He was tormented and kept on the edge of death for such a long time, but he eventually escaped. And so, so they turned him, but it took him a long time to do it. So he was tortured for a very long time, and finally he was able once they turned him, he was able to turn on them, and he kind of took out all of his issues with them on them. And so like that's where he came from, but he's also a known entity to heaven and hell. So like they do keep tabs on him. And so that's how they're able to find him. And he's kind of the guy that lives without remorse. And so it's very, as far as a vampire goes, he's very self-centered, kind of yes. Me first kind of guy. And everybody else is just a means for him to accomplish what he wants. And he's still, you know, obviously he's still a vampire too. So those things, like those carnal things that are innate in vampires, he's learned to keep them in check to a point. But there are other points that would push him past that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's, he's at any moment he could snap and those carnal movements in his soul could take over and overwhelm and overpower him, even though he has this demeanor of calm, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So who is the warlock then?
So the warlock is Donnie Wu. He's a autistic boy of about 15-ish of Chinese descent. And he I believe it's issue 3, we cover that. He is haunted, you know, it just seems like he's in a catatonic state, but he's haunted by like his 9 sorcerous ancestors from back in the Chinese dynasties.
I liked him. He was the one I probably liked the best because it was so unusual.
Yeah. Yeah. He has some wit to him, and he's very, very good at calling out things as he sees them as we go through the issues. So yeah, he's a good character.
All right, the old god. Who's the old god?
So the old gods are all of them, but the big heavy we kind of landed on is we went with Zeus. Zeus is kind of, and he's kind of the catalyst for a lot of this. What Ryan kind of covered on a little bit when the old god's power was waning, right? All their worshipers were kind of disappearing, getting away from it, that kind of thing. The two countries, like Ryan was saying, Lemuria and Atlantis, they stayed true to Poseidon. They didn't wane. They always worshipped him, that kind of thing. Well, Zeus is a very jealous god. So he told Poseidon he needs to destroy both those continents, you know, to show his loyalty to his brother, the king of the gods, Zeus. So Poseidon destroys Atlantis, goes to destroy Lemuria. Jason and the Kingsguard are able to stop him. There's a little bit more to it than that in issue 2. But they capture Poseidon. They spirit him away, hide him where even Zeus can't find him. And that's how Jason becomes immortal, is that Zeus curses him that either until I die or you free my brother, you're going to walk the earth. So,
wow. Okay, last one that it says in here is the monster, and I think visually I know which one that is, but what's the story with the monster?
So that would be Dr. Aldehyde. And so obviously he's based off of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. It's even in the name, right? So he, in fact, we talk about this in the story. So there is an elixir that the Lemurians were able to develop that was made specifically for a Lemurian, right? So their DNA is a little bit different. And when he goes on a deep dive and it gets cut by the shattered bottle and that elixir gets put into his blood, it's what makes him become who he is. And so he has the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's kind of like Hulk even. I mean, that's who Hulk's based off of. You know, he's able to control his rage and his anger, but when it overcomes him, then he's not able to you know, keep it in check. And, you know, he's a timid doctor. That's the whole reason that he was working for the World Health Organization, trying to help with an Ebola outbreak. And at the end of the day, like when that happened, it would have killed most people. In fact, that's one of the reasons that he was called there, is because these people kept on dying, and they found this Lemurian, you know, ruin that still contained this elixir. And that's how he became, you know, infected by it. But, you know, ultimately the infection becomes his superpower and his most difficult challenge at the same time.
Wow.
And there's another facet to that as well, but I don't think that I want to get into that, but Aldehyde's even more complex character than a Jekyll and Hyde kind of character. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to read the book in order to understand fully what I'm saying.
And yep, Tam is a different character from all these ones, right?
Yeah. Hold on. What were you saying, Sean?
I was going to say, yeah, I believe it's the last panel. If you want to get a hint, it's the last panel in issue 5.
Okay. Yep.
Wow. There's a hint about the, yeah.
For Dr. Aldehyde, yeah.
Dr. Aldehyde, yep.
So I have to say that it's especially, which is kind of an indie comic, to get as far as you have, which is as interesting and complex a story and characters as you have. Wow, that is quite the accomplishment. I have to tell you guys, I was sitting reading, I was going like, wow, I can't believe this. Now, you're starting this in 21, you're still going along with it. The 12 and 13 are coming. Do you know how many issues are going to, when this story is completely told, how many is going to be there?
The magic number we're kind of shooting for, and we always say 6 to 8 years, but we figured we also are writing some anthology stories, like a story of Jason in the Old West, a modern day story with Donnie and Pierce and another character, and then a third story in there that I actually sent you, the Heartless Bastards. They're kind of mm-hmm. a mercenary group, kind of a lower deities type of characters. But the magic number where we'd like to reach is 100. So
wow. Okay, wow. So you got a ways to go.
We do. We're actually, just to give kind of tell you where we're at, 12 is getting ready to come out April 27th. We right now have the penciler and inkers working on issue 19. The colorist is finishing 15. The letterer is working on 14. So, wow. Yeah, we're always trying to stay ahead of that curve and try. We want to we really kind of bit off more than we could chew a little bit, I think, because when we first came into this, we knew the story we wanted to tell, right? And we wanted to tell it our way. That's why we first started on the indie route with doing Kickstarters. But we both agreed that we want to tell the story we want to tell. We wanted to have this deep mythology, this deep backstory, be like you said, not be boring, not be cookie cutter, not just, oh, I know what's going to happen on the next page, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we decided to do it, tell it our way, make it as, you know, deep and interesting as we could. That 100 issue was the magic number. So,
well, I have to say, this book does not feel like an indie comic to me.
Oh.
It feels as much, and I like indie comics, is that this one has. This has a lot of depth to it. I can tell there's a lot of thought to it. You can tell. I also love the fact there's a lot of action, and there's the setting changes from time to time. And I love, you know, that I got, like I said, I love to pay attention. And the way to know what's going on is to read and don't skip anything, because there's lots of stuff that are important to know. When a couple, maybe an issue down the pike, we're going to need to know these things.
Yeah.
So I love a book like that. To me, I really enjoy. Like I said, I started reading the first issue, and I got to the last one that you gave me, and I was going like, "This can't be the end." So, because there's all kinds of good things going on. Gosh, just I, you know, the funniest thing is we've kind of given the beginnings of descriptions for these characters, but as we go along in the issues and stuff, there's a lot more going on with these characters that holy smoke, when I started to realize some of what was going on with some of these, oh my goodness, there's a ton going on here with these things.
Oh yeah, you got to make interesting characters, right? I mean, I know it's on paper, but you don't want to make 2D characters, because you got to get the fans interested in it so that they always keep coming back.
That's the
thing. Thank you for noticing that.
Oh, it's just great. I believe me, I there are some books, and there's certain writers, and I won't mention their names, but they have volume after volume of verbiage going on, and I'm going like, okay, I can skip this page because something will happen that'll tell me that what I didn't read here. I can't do that with your book. Your books, I got to pay attention. I got to read everything in there. And boy, it's really good. Now, the good news is there's not always a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of action and activity going on as well. And I love the variety in there. Variety is one of my favorite buzzwords because, you know, there's certain writers who feel that they get paid by the word. And man, there's page after page of dialogue going on. And I'm going, oh man, the old show me, now don't tell me. And I wish more people did that, but you guys do it. It's such a wonderful thing how, you alternate between dialogue and surprises and things going on that when I turn the page, I'm not sure what's happening next. And I love a book that does that to me.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Because it's just amazing to me there's so many books I read them. And one of the worst things I hate is when people do the cover is the last panel in the book. Oh. And you guys never do that. I mean, no. It's all over the place, all over the world. I mean, as far as that goes, there's, places, it starts out in 1810 at one point, and then it moves along to closer to the present. And then we see different, I'm not exactly sure where some of these things take place in the world, but the good news is it's interesting. And I pay attention. I keep going and I find out what's happening. Because, wow, there's so much going on with it that, boy, you got to read and be sure to pay attention to it because it's just great stuff.
And that's one thing. I was a big fan. Me and Ryan, like I said, we were big comic book fans growing up, different flavors of comics. But I was a huge Daredevil Frank Miller fan. So, yeah, you have to pay attention. You got to read. The words tell as much of the story as the artwork does. And we wanted to stay true to kind of that kind of storytelling.
Well, it's nice to alternate too, because, like I said, there are certain writers who just feel that, oh man, I'm sure on television that would be great because, TV, we can get away with that kind of stuff. But in comics, which is a visual, much more visual medium, man, you got to do stuff. And I also love the way that the various characters are so different from each other. They do not. There's one place where I like when the one guy says, "You know what Moses said when first looking upon the promised land?" He said right. A phrase that I don't like to use, but he says, "What a shithole!" He goes, and that surprised me. I was like, "Whoa, okay, I didn't expect that." but see, that kind of stuff is fun for me. To me, as a reader, I get surprised, and that makes me want to keep going and keep finding out more.
It's kind of cool because. I mean, we've talked about Jason's story individually of everything else because since he's lived this long, long, long life, like we could put him in anywhere in the timeline and he could have met anybody, And so like we were able to kind of play with that a little bit and make that kind of a fun thing. But really what it goes back to is the fact that Sean and I put the work in and developed all these backstories and like they're very, very intricate and it helps us to inform the readers like their motivations, but also like we know their life and how they've come to where they're at now is in all these life experiences that they've had, just for an example, for like Jason, think about this guy who's been forced to walk the earth for thousands of years and everybody that he's ever known is long gone. Multiple times over, the thing that he wants more than anything is that sweet release of death. And unfortunately, it's something that's eluded him and he's tried, right? So think about Groundhog's Day a little bit. And the fact is he can still feel pain and he's tried all these things. And every time he's able to walk away, like he still has to heal. But at the end of the day, he's not, because of that curse, he's had to walk the earth for such a long time and people that he's loved and lost are long gone. And, you kind of lose hope. And so what would that do to a person? And Sean and I kind of determined the fact that would probably make him a recluse, and he would want to find things that would make him very like solitary. So for example, he becomes a fire watcher in one of the
Yeah, like a firepower in Alaska. Yep. And a national force in Alaska. Yeah.
And so that way he's very alone and doesn't have to, you know, be attached to the world to where he would lose people, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, unfortunately, this story with Tam, it pulls him back in, but he's not really been part of the world for a long enough time that it's hard for him to interact with humans, let alone with this band of very unique humans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for example, that informs us on how to write that character with somebody that's been removed from society for such a long time. And here's the reasons why he wanted to remove himself and what would motivate him to return, you know? And so like, that gives us the ability to write. And it's the same with Donnie, like this kid who grew up hearing all these loud voices in his head from his dead ancestors in a language he doesn't speak. Yeah, that would drive somebody insane, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so in order for him to not succumb to that insanity, we had to figure out a way for him to overcome that challenge. And so you find that out in, was that issue 3?
Yeah, that was issue 3. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, and so like all these things, like, but he still carries the baggage of hearing these loud 9 Chinese ancestors that he has no idea what they're saying because he's an American kid and he never learned, you know, any form of Chinese. And so they're yelling at him in a foreign language and they're all doing it at the same time. And none of them can hear one another, right? Like it's all separated in his head, but they can all be yelling at him at the same time, you know, because he's the only one that can interact with them. And so they had to figure something out. And so like that informs us on how to write that character, you know, and then most importantly, like Tam, who's our main character, right? Like her life is completely disjointed. Even, you know, I know it's not on the scale of Jason, but for a young lady having her world just kind of turned upside down. And the simple fact is the world, the very fate of this world that she lives in hinges on her and the decisions that she makes. And she never knows if she's making the right decision. She never knows if she's on the right path. And at the end of the day, like she's still a young woman that has other kind of thoughts and desires. And all of a sudden she's forced into a role that she doesn't know that she wants or not.
Yeah. And so a good thing. And like you were talking about earlier, Wayne, you know, how does a guy write a female character? Well, one, we're girl dads, both of us, me and Ryan, you know, so we have a lot of estrogen in our household. So
yep.
We got some great inspiration there, but just taking the male female out of it. I mean, we thought, you know, you don't know anything when you're a kid, right? I didn't know anything when I was 15, 16 years old, 17 years old. And now I couldn't imagine any of us being thrown 200 years in the future at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing anything. Now everything's completely changed and just how traumatic that would be for someone, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Let alone with the weight of the world laying literally on your shoulders.
That's true, yes.
Now, you know, I have to say one thing too I really enjoyed was that the characters evolve and move around in the story. So you think one person may be a good guy, but then a couple issues down the road, something happens and they don't necessarily stay in that space.
So that's a universal thing, right? Like I would say that most people are for the most part good, but everybody has the capability to do evil,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, or to make a bad choice or to get into a situation where there's no good choice.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, we wanted to kind of lean into that a little bit because there's a lot of gray in this world. And that's just our kind of our commentary on it is like, yes, most people are pretty, you know, are pretty good people, but if they're given a situation that they don't see any other way out, they're going to make that bad choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we always came back to one saying we had, if we found ourselves making a character too angelic or too goody two shoes was, just remember, you're always the villain in somebody's story,
right?
You may not know that story. You may not even remember what happened, but somewhere down the line, you were a villain in somebody's story. So.
Yeah, it's just really well done. I mean, as far as like the characters, you've got a nice bunch of people, like 7, 8, or more people involved. And the way that they shift around is believable and understandable. And it's so interesting how it moves forward. And I'm always going like, now, why did they do that? And I want to understand all that. So there is so much going on. So it's easily understood, but you do like to surprise us on occasion. So I like that too.
For sure. So another thing that I want to bring up too, really another thing that we had talked about when we were writing the story is we didn't want to have a villain of the week or a god of the week where, you know, hey, we're going to set up the story and knock it down at the end of the issue. Right. Mm-hmm. So like all of them, maybe they have their own arc, but they're not just, you know, with dealing with the deities, right? Like, do we ever know if they're truly gone? Mm-hmm. Like at any time in this story, you know, after a god's been, you know, dispatched, who knows, they may show up again. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, like there's a lot of ambiguity on that kind of thing. And so we wanted to kind of convey that as a commentary in the world in general. Is like there's a lot of ambiguity here in general. And so like where you've been able to overcome and triumph in something, like there's always going to be something that comes back to knock you back down. And mm-hmm. and so we wanted to kind of present that as the challenge for the team is we wanted to have these hard villains to overcome, but, you know, working as a team, like maybe they're able to overcome it at that time, but there's no guarantee that that's going to stay that way. Like the we always wanted to subvert the status quo, so to speak, but in a good way, you know, and mm-hmm. make it interesting. And, oh, that's why we've really worked to stay away from that villain of the week kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm. Now I got to ask you guys, you said something about 100 issues and stuff. Do you guys have it plotted out ahead of time? Do you know where you're going to go, or does it change as you go along?
No, we do have it. We have the overall story arc. We know, you know, the main beats, the beginning, the main beats, how the things go, but the daily writing, we're up to issue 26 right now in the script phase. But yeah, we know the big plot points that we got to hit by certain issues. So sometimes we do add, hey, I read about this old god, this old Egyptian god, Bobby, Egyptian god, he was the ferryman for the Egyptians, you know? So we just got to write this story because it's just such a funny, cool old god character, you know? So, mm-hmm. but right. No, the main plot points, the beginning, the middle, the end, we do have, but there's a lot of filler to be left. And that's also why we do, we're going to do, I guess we call them stories in the Immortalis verse, like I sent you the two issues of the Heartless Bastards. Mm-hmm, right. That's just like a two issue limited series about some of the side characters in there. So,
Wow. So you've fleshed this universe out pretty well, I have to say.
You know, it's funny. We talk about that. We have about a 10 to 12,000 year history that we can draw on. I mean, think about it, like our oldest character, since he's immortal and he's lived for 10,000 years, like we have that story, but we also have the idea of like looking for the Immortalis throughout the annals of history. And like the team that we have assembled isn't maybe the first team that has been assembled in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And so like we can draw on that kind of thing. And we've kicked around characters, but the cool part is we can draw from all different parts of history and mythology and make that story kind of mold it to where we're trying to go. But Sean and I definitely have an ending in mind, and mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily been written completely, but we know how the characters, what their end game is for each one of them. And because we have such an immense backstory, we have the basic concepts of where we would want to go for like a volume 2 and a volume 3, but they wouldn't necessarily be based on Tam, but on other characters that were introduced in the story.
Wow.
So it is definitely something that we kept on talking about, is the fact that the universe just kept growing. Anytime that we would talk about it and start putting it on paper, it would grow.
Wow. Yeah,
and so we have so much material that we can draw on. And the fact is the story we're telling right now is kind of the fulcrum point of the entire universe. And so this story has to happen in order for us to be able to tell the other stories.
Wow. Well, I hope you get to tell them all, because What I've read so far, I literally was going like, now what? Now what's going to happen? Right? I have no idea what's going to come next, and I love that. When I can't tell what's going to happen, then I want to see it through to the end. And this book is really terrific. And I just have to say, it's so rare in a comic to get, because, you know, and it's funny because it on some levels it reminds me a little of X-Men, because X-Men has decades and decades of continuity that they're working on, but I don't care about it. That's the bad news about the X-Men. This I care about. I want to know where these people are going and what's going to happen with them.
Right.
And stuff. So you guys are doing, I wish you guys had been writing X-Men. But
oh my gosh.
Because, so, man.
That's cool, that'd be a dream job right there. He's a big X-Men fan.
So my guy is Jim Lee. Like he's,
oh,
I man. Love that guy. And the fact that his run on X-Men is what brought me into comic books. And so, like, I've always been a big X-Men fan. I mean, not so much now. Like, I as I've gotten older, I just kind of gotten away from it. But, you know, in the 80s and 90s, that was my comic book. Like, I could not get enough of it.
Mm-hmm. I had a roommate whose name was Scott, and he liked Cyclops because
– Oh, yeah.
And the terrible thing was that after a while, he got bored. And he didn't read – I was buying the X-Men so he could read them. But then he stopped reading them, and I said, well – I'm going to stop buying them then if you're not reading them, because I don't know any of the history of this. I read the early Jack Kirby stuff, but I don't know any of these.
No, I've got a couple of those issues. My guy obviously was Wolverine, but Wolverine when it was Jim Lee, and then when they turned it over to Jay Lee, you know, that was like my two favorite artists and storytellers were those two guys. And wow. The simple fact is like, We didn't know this at the time, but we had such a golden age of comic books back then in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys like Sean and I that, you know, that's we just want to pay our respect to that era, but also we wanted to put our own spin on it, you know.
Well, maybe someday they'll get to draw some of your stories. It would be kind of fun to see them do that.
That'd be awesome. Great to see.
Well, it's called Immortalis, and it comes out from Marcosia. And again, tell us where we can get a hold of this book so people can dive in and read from the start.
Yeah, you can go to Marcosia.com or your favorite place to purchase comics. We're on digitally drive-through comics, Cosmixology through Amazon. For paper copies of either the trade or the graphic novel, you can go through Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Waterstones, Fry's, and there's probably about five other ones I'm forgetting.
Wow. And most importantly, mnlcomics.com.
mnlcomics.com. Yep, that's our webpage. So,
speaking of that, let's start with you, Sean. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
We have a Immortalis The on Instagram. Facebook is Tam Immortalis. We have MNL Comics, which is our webpage. Definitely advise anybody that wants to follow along with the series and us and see what comic cons we're going to be at. Go there, sign up for our email newsletter. We get that out and let everybody know when the issues are coming out, where to purchase them, all that stuff. So
Ryan, you share the same or you have your own?
I do. unfortunately, we are neither Sean nor I, because of our age, are very good at social media. So other than like Immortalis The on X and Instagram, like we, you know, that's where you'll be able to find all the stuff on Tam, you know,
okay.
For like a personal page. Like I have them, but it's not like I post very much.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing is you're busy making comics, so you don't have time to do the social media
that's
stuff.
That's right.
That's it.
I will tell you, honest to goodness, we actually have a social media manager that's fantastic, and she's really been the driving force behind our small social media presence, and it's way bigger than it was when Sean and I were managing it 100% of the time.
Wow. Now, are you guys, you mentioned cons. Do you guys have any more conventions coming this year that people could come and see you at?
So I think the next one we're going to do will be up in Wyoming, in Casper, Wyoming. We'll do that Comic-Con this year. This will be the third year we've been there. We do Mesa County Comic-Con. That's up in the mountains, up in the Rocky Mountains. We're going to be down at Albuquerque Comic-Con in January. That's always a great show. We love to do that. We did Texoma in, where was that at, Ryan?
Durant, Oklahoma.
Durant, Oklahoma. That was the last one we did.
Right.
So we'll probably hit all those again, as well as Fort Collins, Colorado has a Comic-Con. We're looking at one in Idaho, too, we want to try and do. So,
and then also Kansas City as well, too. There's
Kansas City, yep. We, our first year we did 17. We backed off a little bit because we were trying to get the social media stuff going more this year. So we probably only have done, I think, two this year. And, yeah, probably about 8 to 10 last year. So, but okay. We'd like to get back more into the Comic-Cons. I love meeting the fans at the Comic-Cons. It's a great time.
Yep. Because the thing about being a comic creator is you are alone so much of the time. It's nice to actually get out. And that's what I can talk of my own experience with my roommate. We went out to conventions and stuff like that. And I'm just the editor, you know. And so people come up to me and try to tell me how great the book was. I said, see that guy over there? He's the creator. Tell him. He needs to hear that. And so I'll tell you one quick story. We were going around. We were in Virginia, and there were two comic shops across the street from each other. One was like a statue place, more or less, and the other one was a comic store. And we were into the comic store, and we're in there, and we're talking. The lady is getting ready. It's a Tuesday. She's getting ready for Wednesday to put the books out. And my roommate's gone, and we're talking about, yeah, and the company has his name, and he names the name of the book that he creates. And she stops, the girl, she drops everything. She comes running around the counter. She flings her arms around him, says, that's my favorite comic.
Oh, wow.
And I was wishing I had my camera in my hand at that time. But she was so happy with that. And it was such good for him because, you know, when he's busy writing stuff, sometimes he thinks about that, and it kind of encourages him to keep going with stuff like that.
For so, sure. Yeah.
Always good to have answer. Those things.
Yes. Yep.
Always good to. Well, it's great to talk with you guys. And boy, I'm going to have to subscribe if there's a subscription way to be sure to get this, because I want to keep reading because there's all kinds of good things happening. And I have no idea what's coming, which makes me all the more interested. But again, it's Immortalis. And if you go to Marcosia and look it up there, and what was the other website you guys run?
M&L Comics, M, the letter M, A-N-D, the letter L, comics.com.
Okay, so people can track it down. Well, keep up the good stuff. Boy, I have to say, I really enjoyed this. I was just, like I said, I started and I could not put it down. And now I literally got to the end and said, no, not the end. Can't be. But you guys keep up the wonderful stuff. It's such a good thing to read something that is, that grabs you by the, my brother used to say, by the short and curlies and won't let you go. And that's what this does. And so it's, again, it's Immortalis, and be sure to check it out. And all I can say is you guys keep it up.
All right, thank you, Wayne.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting us be on your podcast.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Over, Joker.
Over? Why, my dear delusional Dark Knight, it hasn't even begun.